All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, June 12th. Back from the weekend, I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
More from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. As always, head on over and grab a free three-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at lineuplab.com. Optimal lineups for MLB, NFL, only a couple months away, which is crazy. Some preseason stuff already starting to come out, which makes NFL seem like it's right around the corner. It's all covered under one subscription package. You don't pay by site and provider. We think PGA contests are coming for next season, so we're in beta mode of testing those projections. It's all covered under one subscription package. DFSR.com/MLB will get you started free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, how's it going? How was your weekend?
It's going pretty good. It was a lovely weekend. My friend was back up from college helping me plant a garden, you know?
Just like Good Lord. Like I wish I had. Man. Never mind. I would start the podcast. If we weren't like a minute and a half in here, I don't want to do the whole intro again. I would definitely just start this over. And actually, there's a chance I might just somehow just sort of block this off and see if I can pick up with my next thing. I was going to tell you how my weekend was. But
now, dude, true ballers know to own, you know, being an old person. It's kind of a brag that I have a garden, you know, my own fat crib here, new patio, the whole thing, buddy. We're in our 30s now. We got to get excited.
I'm almost 40. So we have a PGA. Chris Durrell and I are going to do a PGA U.S. Open podcast today. I'm going to post it on this feed and our other DFSR podcast network feed where we're going to break down the U.S. Open that's coming up on Thursday. The majors are always big ones for especially on DraftKings where they do Millie Maker and just have a bunch of big contests. They soften the pricing a lot for the major just because they want to attract attract a lot of attention, which they do. So I actually spent the weekend watching a little bit of golf on Sunday, this is the only reason I didn't want to start doing golf projections was to not have to actually follow golf all that closely. Like it was going to be fine to set it and forget it until I was actually in a real sweat for our new projection systems optimal lineup. Coming into the final day where I was in the top 10 of the $7 dog leg on FanDuel, which the top prize was $15,000. I was in the top 10 entering Sunday and ended up like 12th. So new golf projections, kind of good, I think.
Yeah,
so,
baby. Let's go.
I'm excited. And our DraftKings lineup cash with two guys missing the cut. So I'm actually not good that they missed the cut, encouraged by some of the other value that it's drawing out. So anyway, go check out the PGA podcast. That will be up later on today, probably mid-afternoon at some point. We got a Tuesday full of baseball here, and I logged in this morning, saw guys like starting pitcher twos on DraftKings, like Bartolo Colon sneaking around, yep. Jaime Garcia sneaking around, and I thought, there's got to be something off, because sometimes you log in, maybe a full audit hasn't been done on the day, and you know we haven't gotten really down to the decimal points on some of these guys, but man, I think it really speaks to the theme of the starting pitching on DraftKings. They have done a very, I don't know if it's good or I don't know if this is the word, but they have done an aggressive job on pricing the only guys that seem that you would really want to roster. That are almost all seem too expensive. And then you have a bunch of guys that all seem too cheap and bad. So we can get into where we think we're going to land on the DraftKings guys. But let's just start with some of these pitchers. We can start with FanDuel's obviously pricing a little softer. I don't think we have a pitcher over $10,000 again. The highest pitcher is Nola at $9,500. Nola at 9,500, I mean, against Colorado, they're outside of course. Is this, and we'll talk about him on DraftKings in a second, but I mean, on FanDuel, do you see him as the top play, or can you be talked into like the Mikolas, Folty, McCullers kind of group of guys below him?
No, I think there's a good argument for him being the top play. You know, the Ks are down a little bit this year. You don't love to see kind of regression there after back-to-back seasons where he almost touched 10 Ks per nine. To pull that down to 8.5 Ks per nine is not a super welcome sign. And actually, the xFIP this year is up a little bit, even though the ERA is a lot better this year because the walks have remained constant. And really, the only thing different about Nola this year is he's running a lot better on BABIP. The batting average on balls in play allowed this year at 251 does look to be an unsustainable number. Still, though, at a 3.2 xFIP, he's going to be one of the top pitchers at this price point that we're going to see, period. So getting him against a Rockies team that's obviously dramatically worse on the road at a sub $10,000 price looks pretty darn attractive to me. I mean, I think it's the National League weighing in there, the Vegas implied totals. I think basically everything is pointing in favor of Nola. You know, it's just a day too where there really aren't that, there's no top end pitching, right? So in the tier below, Nola looks like a good spot.
Rockies are bottom third team against righties this year, and that's including them having played a bunch of games in course.
Remarkable.
again, like, they haven't played a ton of games. Like, they played many more away games than they have home games. I don't know if just because of the way the schedule is shaken
out. And
they've
still played more games in Coors than any other team in the majors, right? So,
well, exactly.
Can't make too many excuses for them.
Right. They're just not a very good offensive team. I'm with you on Nola. The only concern I have for Nola when I see big dips in K rates, not big dips, but it's pretty significant. I mean, down like 20% or something like that. I do like to see if he's throwing the same pitch repertoire as he had the year before, and he's just not. He's throwing the fastball 49% as opposed to 54 and 58% the previous 2 years. He's throwing a changeup a lot more. And if a new set of pitches is yielding worse results, there's only two ways it can go. You can just keep pitching the same pitches and have the worst results, or make a change where he gets back to where he was the last couple of years, which is maybe relying more on the fastball. But the fastball velocity is up too. So it's not like he's trying to get away from a fastball that maybe has lost a mile per hour or something like that.
Right.
It's actually a full mile and a half per hour increase over 2 years ago. So throwing harder. I don't know. I think that my guess is we do see a return. My guess is the K's come back up, and he's now 84 innings into the season and they haven't really. So that's kind of where I land. And I'm with you that there just aren't a ton of other high-end options. Of the group that I mentioned earlier, Mikolas, Foltynewicz, and McCullers, I think those are the three that our system at least kind of has grouped right below Nola in terms of just overall raw points. And on FanDuel, they're all sort of grouped into the same price tier as well. Any of those guys stand out to you? They all come at you in completely different ways, and they all have different matchups, with Mikolas obviously getting the best one in the Padres.
They all have different matchups. They're not all pitching against the same team. That seems like it would be more fair.
I meant that they just have different ranges of matchups in terms of how good the teams are that they're facing. Of course, they're not all facing the same team. Does any of those guys stand out to you, or can you make a case for maybe pivoting even into any one of them for cash games?
Well, I mean, I think McCullers is the best pitcher on balance out of the group listed there. I just don't really love the matchup for him. And again, if we're just comparing him to playing him against Nola, for instance, for cash game purposes, the A's this season, in spite of having a very hard home park, unlike the Rockies, have a 321 WOBA against righties. That's eighth best in the majors. They're about league average when it comes to striking out against right-handed pitching. And McCullers, you know, he's solid. There's no doubt about it. But he's another one. The K's are down almost to 4K per nine last year. The walks are up a little bit. I mean, the ERA is down a little bit, but the xFIP is actually worse. It just seems like a worse play than Nola in every respect. So I just don't know why I would choose him specifically. I guess for big tournaments, you could argue that potentially he has higher K upside. I think actually he probably is a more natural K guy than Nola is when it all comes out in the wash, like at the end of their careers. But yeah, for tonight, I don't, you know, it's in the American League. Like, the list goes on. There's a number of reasons why I wouldn't want to go there for cash.
His pitch FX stuff, like, so the pitch type is he's really just every single year decreased the amount that he uses his fastball and then increased the amount that he uses the changeup, which is weird. And the other thing that I looked at with McCullers is again, sometimes it's not all about what kind of pitches, it's not all kind of if you just made gross changes in what kind of pitches you're throwing, but it's also how batters are reacting to those pitchers. So if you look at his outside of the zone swing percentage, that basically just means how often are guys chasing a ball and swinging when the ball is not a strike. If you've never heard of that stat before, that has dropped for him. That has dropped for him pretty dramatically this year as well. And for a guy that is kind of wild, that kind of matters, right? Because like guys like him that have insane movement on their pitches and that are kind of relying on, like, you know, hitting you with a fastball and then hitting you with the changeup or the slider afterwards, but you think it's the fastball, right? Like, you're chasing outside the zone as you make an adjustment. If you start losing some of that, then that is an exact reason why the walks are up, you know, half a walk per nine are up, and the K's are down. Like, those two things are completely tied together. So, again, right. if it's a scouting thing and teams have just said, dude, just don't swing, right? Like, if it's one and two, and he just comes with the slider or the changeup like almost every time there, just don't swing. Like, have a little patience. Now it's 2-2, and now you – or, you know, 3-2 or whatever it's going to be, and now you are just in such a better spot. I don't know. So maybe
exactly. You see that with when guys come up at first right away too, where they'll be like – they're like, oh, it's a calculated wildness. It's like, nah, it's just wildness. And, like, guys aren't used to you, like, throwing a ball in certain counts. Like, a better example, right. Maybe 3-1, and you're, like, dancing outside the zone. They're like, okay, well, you got me there. I didn't know you were going to throw a curveball in the dirt on 3-1. And the truth is they weren't trying to, right? So, yeah, a lot of that needs to get cleaned up as they go forward.
So another guy, so going the opposite way, we have Foltynewicz. Folty, he has been, for his career, about an 8.5K per nine guy, and now is spiking over 10.5 Ks per nine in this season. Now, the walks are up a little bit too, but his xFIP is down. ERA is way down. He's been a mid-fours guy. He's down to 2.3. Some of that's BABIP. Some of it's left on base. But it's also because of the Ks. He's just striking out way more guys. Is this, when we look at a guy who we came into the season projecting him somewhere around 8.5 Ks per nine, you know, he's in an age where you can build in a little bit of growth for a guy, but not this kind. And so I always wonder a little bit about when we are resetting K numbers as the season goes on, because I think that is warranted to do with pitchers if you think that there's some kind of change. Where do we land with a guy like him? Because he's going completely the opposite direction. He's just striking way more guys out than he ever has in the past. Do we think that's in any way sustainable?
I don't think so. I think when it comes to Foltynewicz, like, the greater body of work is probably more relevant than the 74 innings this season. And so I'll explain why, I suppose. So he's 26 years old. So like you said, there's still plenty of room for growth in his repertoire. But a lot of times, so take a guy like McCullers, just for comparison's sake, you can look at his minor league K numbers and see him just touching double digit Ks per nine at frequent stops along the way. And so, you know, he comes to the majors, there's an adjustment period, and eventually he gets back up to where he sort of was in the minor leagues. When it comes to Foltynewicz, like, he's never had anything like a sustained 10 plus K per nine at any of his stops in the minors. It was a lot of, 7.4 Ks per nine through 152 innings, and, maybe touching a K per inning in 2014 in AAA. Like, but this is sort of unprecedented. There's not a team switch, which oftentimes you could attribute to like a big K spike. You know, maybe they see something that the prior team didn't. One thing that I'd say is in favor of the Ks is actually when the walks go up, like, he could just be taking more chances around the zone. And if you are used to the Foltynewicz of 2016 that only walked 2.5 per nine, he's going to catch a lot of guys off balance. But kind of like the discussion we were just having, I don't know how sustainable that is. So I guess at this point, I see Foltynewicz as something of just an upside play. I wouldn't want to bank on this for cash games. I mean, for a number of reasons, but first and foremost, just because there's other safer options, but also because it looks a little bit like a bubble waiting to burst to me. And it looks like I'm, based on these prices, that I'm already paying for the season's production. And that's not a good value where I'm coming from.
Yep, I think I land probably somewhere in the middle. I think that looking at some of his PitchFX stuff, there's probably reason to believe some of it is going to sustain, and I just don't think, I'm with you that it's not going to land in this 10.5 Ks per nine. I think if we saw him a tick above a strikeout inning at the end of the season, that wouldn't surprise me. He's throwing the hardest he's ever thrown in his career. He's up 1.5 miles on the fastball, 1.5 miles up on the fastball over last year. More fastballs, too. And so, like you said, the walks have come along with it, so maybe that increase. We saw this like with DeGrom last year. Like, the increase in velocity comes maybe in an increase in just lack of less control. That just is sometimes what happens.
Yeah, when I throw the ball as hard as I can, I have less control than when I don't.
Right, exactly. Just like, and that just goes up by grades. I mean, I know you're a real faulty type, but yeah, that does seem like a perfect comp. Fastball, he's throwing the fastball more, throwing the slider less. And throwing the sinker less and throwing the slider more. So there's been something of a change in how he's been attacking batters, and I don't think he's going to – I agree with you. I don't think he's going to stay. Now, going over to – well, and then there's Miles Mikolas too, and I guess he gets the benefit of playing the Padres here. He's 9,300, but he Ks so many fewer guys. I mean, can you – if you look at these guys just on paper, Nola, K, you know, whatever you want to say about the dip in Ks, Folty, McCullers, and then you get Mikolas, who strikes out 6.5 guys per nine. I know he's got the best matchup of all of them, but is that just too few Ks, or does he eat enough innings and have good enough matchup that you can actually put him in the same class as the guys we mentioned before?
I'm definitely not going to play Mikolas today, I don't think. I mean, there's no upside for big tournaments with the ridiculously low K numbers, and on DraftKings, he's just so expensive. Like, what am I paying for? Like, what world am I living in where I'm going to pay $12,000 for Miles Mikolas? Like, I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to let somebody else assume that he's the guy. Or it's, I'm sorry, 10-9 on DraftKings, 12,000 is Nola. I'm going to let somebody else feel like he's the safe matchup, when in reality, Nola's just 15 times safer and just a little bit more, and just more upside too. Like, I don't see the argument there. Actually, while we're on the subject of pitcher two on DraftKings, one guy we haven't brought up so far, who I think is probably even FanDuel viable on today as well, is John Gray. I mean, John Gray's peripherals are better than almost everyone we've discussed so far. But at some point, he's going to need to address the issue of his batting average balls in play allowed, because last year, 336, you're like, oh, he's running a little bad. This year, 379. So what's the truth of John Gray? Like, is he really going to be a guy who can strike out 10 plus guys per nine innings, but for some reason, just turns every single guy into Jose Altuve when they put the ball in play. Like, I don't know what to make of that. Now, obviously, some of that's going to be Coors driven. Like, Coors facilitates a much higher batting average on balls in play just because of the thin air and, you know, line drives drop off and stuff like that. But this can't possibly sustain itself forever, right? Like, this would be unheard of.
Well, the thing is, okay, so his Ks per nine. So the times where I don't like to use Ks per nine is when the K percentage hasn't changed. So he's like, by percentage, he's still striking out basically the same amount of guys that he struck out for his career. Okay. Like, his career number is 25%. This year he's 25.7%. Whereas the strikeouts per nine are up almost the whole K per nine because he's just
facing more batters. Right.
Exactly, he's facing more batters because now that's got to land somewhere. Because he's probably facing more batters because they're all just getting on base because he's every single guy that hits the ball just, you know, that gets through the infield or lands in the outfield or just, you know, or smokes a double or whatever it's going to be. He's definitely way better than the 5.66 ERA. I think that we can probably agree on. He's run very bad. The more games that go on that where he's just not able to get through six innings and just and basically like losing the game or whatever, it gets harder and harder to believe that these rate numbers are going to come back around. But I'm with you. In terms of just overall deal, the $8,000 you get for him on DraftKings, I think he's incredibly viable as a starting pitcher too. I get it that he's an underdog, which you never like to see, but the Phillies just aren't. I mean, I know that the Phillies are favored here. They're just also like not a great offensive team. They're better with Hoskins back for sure, but on the season they strike out. It might be the most. Yeah, 27% of the time versus righties this season. That is the most in the majors by almost like a whole percentage strikeout. And they're a bottom third team against righties. I think he's a guy.
Yeah, I think it's just a good spot. And I also just want to know who else you're supposed to play at pitcher two on DraftKings. Like, if people don't like John Gray or there's, you know, chinks in his armor, I totally get it. Tell me who the guy is then, because that's where I'm at right now. Do you want to pay 10.9 for Miles Mikolas? Because I don't. I'd much rather pay 2,900 less for a guy who I think is just a better pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, some of the prices on some of these other guys too, like Buchholz, 8,200. Okay, no thanks. These are the guys that are more expensive than Gray today. Buchholz, Adam Plutko, Jaime Barea, and then the guys we mentioned above, and then the guys mentioned before, also Eduardo Rodriguez. Chris Stratton is the same price. Of that group, I can't imagine making a case for any of those. I could almost combine some of these two guys together, like in their stats, and like take slightly worse odds on Gray. I'm being serious. Like, that's how bad some of these other pitchers are. So no, I'm with you on Gray, and I still don't think that's enough savings because some of those other pitchers are so damn expensive that I can't even. I mean, maybe McCullers at under 10,000 is a viable guy, but all the rest of the guys are around 12,000. I just don't even know how you go there. DraftKings is very difficult today.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, DraftKings is pretty difficult. I guess one other guy that our system pulled out last time, and I'm hesitant to go back to the well here, but it's Jaime Garcia. You know, we played him last in his last start, and he actually went out there and got 6Ks. Oh, I'm sorry. We pulled him at the last second because it looked too weird with him being in there, and adjust some last-second modifications, and then or made some last-second modifications, and then he went out there and just had 6Ks in six innings against Baltimore at home. So, you know, who knows? He's still cheap. He's the same salary. He's got a much better matchup at Tampa Bay than he did at home against Baltimore. So, you know, at 6,100, maybe that's another direction you can go if you find a lot of bats you like. But, yeah, I don't know, man. It's a pretty much a wasteland situation on DraftKings right now.
Yeah, and actually, Baltimore is actually, we're getting to the sponsor and then the stacks in a second, but the Baltimore is rounding into that, maybe just worse than Tampa Bay. They rank second to last against lefty pitching this year. They are awful. And by the way, this is apropos of nothing else except I just saw it last night. Real quick, do you want to guess what Chris Davis's OPS is this season?
Ooh, 581.
Oh, you are way high. Lower, go.
400.
460.
That's pretty low.
460 OPS on the season. My God. I mean, that's if you didn't have a contract in place, I don't know what else you do with the guy. Like, that is, I have a note to go look at. That's the lowest, even among like some pitchers that have had this many plate appearances over the last couple seasons. Like, it is, he is some otherworldly bad. But in general, Orioles have just really just S'd the bed this season. All right, hit us up with a sponsor, and then we'll get into some stacks.
All right. Don't want to get that explicit tag when you talk about people S'ing the bed, but we'll go ahead and talk about fantasyfactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a great place to go and play salary cap game formats like you're used to without all the sharks putting in hundreds of lineups in every contest. So, really, we recommend it for our users who are putting in between $5 and $100 per night. It's a really great spot for them. They also run a lot of interesting contests like their Progressive Home Run Derby contest, among other things too. So check them out, fantasyfactor.com.
All right, so whenever you mention, whenever we're kind of wishy-washy about this many pitchers, and especially when you see just not very good pitchers completely overpriced on DraftKings, that's usually a sign that there's just lots of bad pitchers going, because the DraftKings algorithm 100% factors in the rest of the pitching player pool, or excuse me, the probable pitcher playing pool when it comes to, say that three times fast, when it comes to pricing out some of these guys. And that's why you'll see sometimes just spikes in salaries on guys, because it's saying, well, this guy's, you know, FanDuel does not do this, and this is why the pricing is so soft. But on DraftKings, you know, these guys spike some of their salaries because they know that Mikolas and McCullers are just much better than the rest of the guys going, which is to say there are a lot of bad pitchers going today. I was having trouble just even honing in on some of these guys because there's a bunch of losers. And also, we have a couple games, just worth a note as we're talking right now. There are three games that do not have lines on them, the Dodgers and Rangers. And I believe that's because, as of this morning, the Dodgers hadn't officially announced a starter. I'm not exactly why San Diego and the Cardinals don't have a line right now, except unless they're waiting to see if they're going to do like this bullpen thing with Matt Strom, because he's the starter, but he only pitched two innings in his last start. So they seem like they're doing the Tampa Bay Rays throw out a guy to start the game. And then there was one other game that didn't have a line, and I'm just the Blue Jays and the Rays don't have a line either. That probably because they're doing the same bullpen.
Yeah, like so anyway, the same reason, just, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing like Ryan Stanek was listed the starter, and they're just probably trying to figure out who's coming in after him, if that's even what the plan is. So anyway, just worth noting, as we mentioned some of these teams, that we do not have Vegas lines on those three games. Is there a way that you're going? I mean, on FanDuel, we can kind of play anybody just because no pitchers played is priced over 10,000. So I don't know. We're not worried about pricing there. It's a little bit harder on DraftKings, obviously, if you're thinking about rostering any of the expensive pitchers that we talked about.
Yeah, I think starting with the Cardinals is a pretty reasonable spot here. Matt Strom, they may be doing this bullpen by committee thing, and Vegas might have a tough time evaluating how many innings Strom is going to go, like, you know, who he's going to really face and what other guys are going to come out of the bullpen. There's a lot of reasons why they wouldn't welcome that level of uncertainty into their lives. But for our purposes, first of all, Matt Strom is just awful. Like, this season, he's pitched in 10 different games, 14 innings, less than 5 Ks per 9, more than 5.5 walks per 9. Those are as bad a peripherals as you'll ever see. And to get those out of the bullpen as well just means that this guy's just got no business being in the major leagues, essentially. He looked, I guess, somewhat promising out of the bullpen in 2016, and since then it's all gone to pot. The walks are completely out of control. A relatively patient team like the Cardinals should be able to pick him apart and just get into some other bullpen guys soon enough, right? So I think that I think that's actually a pretty good place to begin. And I legit don't even know where else to go here. I mean, you really have, in some ways, a who's who of terrible pitching. So you have the Indians going up against the White Sox, and that's James Shields. So sign me up for that. You can certainly stack Indians into that all day. You got Sal Romano facing off against Ian Kennedy in a game today. Like, I don't know. It goes on and on. And a lot of these are looking pretty similar to me. Is there another one that jumps out as like a headliner for you?
I want to go back to Strom real quick for a second. My only concern with these bullpen, the interesting thing with this new bullpen thing is, in general, you know, people talk about, oh, you get into the bullpen, but that's almost always a worse place to be than versus just about any starter. Like, most teams' worst bullpen guys are still better, like, on an inning per inning basis than a team's starter, just because the matchups are just so driven toward this pitcher having success. That I think that I wonder if this is another reason that Vegas doesn't want to introduce the uncertainty, because this is just not a place they've had to evaluate before. Like, so when Strom pitched last game, he went two innings. He struck out two guys in two innings. Then they brought in, long story short, they struck out 13 guys in 9 innings, because it was all bullpen guys. No one pitched more than two innings per time. So while it sounds sometimes good to get into a bullpen, I'm not positive like that's always the best place. Like, you'd much rather get five innings out of James Shields than just about than any bullpen guy in the White Sox. Like, you don't want James Shields out of the game. Like, you want
That's true on some level, but I guess, yeah, you're probably right for the purposes of these intentional bullpen games. But oftentimes, getting into the bullpen, like, say James Shields only goes two innings, that's probably because he got rocked, and they're probably just going to bring in someone who they think is even worse than James Shields to pitch in long relief. Now, in the case of James Shields, it'd almost certainly be wrong because he's just that bad. But, you know, like, when you're just watching, like, if Madison Bumgarner goes out there and has a tough start to a game, you're going to get some guy in long relief who's significantly worse than the starting pitcher, who's probably still going to pitch four innings because they don't want to use their actual good bullpen guys in that capacity. You know what I mean? So I think that you're right. And, you know, that's actually pretty compelling. I think it's probably worth going back to the drawing board, particularly with teams like the Rays, to figure out maybe even just create a guy in our system, like Rays bullpen or something, right, and give them stats. You know, just for the starting purposes, because oftentimes, you know, we consider the bullpen, obviously, because how could you not? But the starters will make a bigger difference than, because you know who the starter is, right? But
yes,
you don't know who's going to fill in, which guys specifically are going to fill into the bullpen. And there tends to be a pretty wide variation on the abilities of the guys coming out. Anyways, I think, I think that's a subject worth taking a deeper look at. And so we should probably do that soon.
I agree that I'm not talking about the four inning mop up duty guy, because that I'm with, that wasn't the exact situation I was talking,
you're right,
about. Other guys going here, I mean, you have Clay Buchholz going. He's been, it's really funny actually when you look at the, actually he's got a 188 ERA. Do not be fooled. The xFIP is more in line with what he's done in his career. Now he looks slightly better than the 6K per nine guy that we saw when he was with sort of between the Red Sox and the Phillies, when the wheels were completely falling off the train back in 2016 and 2017. So he looks it looks like he's returned a little bit in terms of control. He's still not a very good pitcher. I'm a little surprised by the Pirates line, but that's probably more, it has to do with they're like a sub four implied runs right now. That probably has to do more with them just being, having guys like Colin Moran and Elias Diaz in the middle of the lineup more than Austin Meadows, guys like this, than it has to do with Buchholz. But yeah, there are just some just really bad guys. If the Indians keep hitting guys like Greg Allen at the top of the lineup, he's still, I know you went 0-for-5 last night, but you're getting a phenomenal value on him against Shields. Yeah. And then on FanDuel especially, if you combine a guy like Allen and then the pitchers that we talked about that you're not paying for, you really are just getting a kind of a who's who. I actually want to go real quick through some of these FanDuel guys, because there are some guys that are completely mispriced on FanDuel. And it's because this injury thing with them, with their algorithm, the injury knocks down the price. And when that happens, you just get, like, Mookie Betts is 4,500. You just kind of, last night it was a little weird because he had a bad matchup against Bundy. Almost against anybody but, an above average pitcher, Betts at 4,500 is probably worth it. Carlos Correa is 2,700. I'm not positive he's playing today because he sat out a bunch of games, but he's expected to be back. Like, 2,700 for Correa. Like, now you're just really playing anybody. Like, I don't even know, like, what to do with some of these prices. And this is why, this is the case against a full-on team stack, at least in cash, for a nightly tonight on FanDuel, because there's just so many one-off guys that you just are in good spots with. So anyway, I kind of went off the where to go in terms of just like total team stacking. But FanDuel,
all right, let's bring you back for a second then, because there's one team that we haven't actually weighed in on yet, and a line just came in on this game, and it's the Dodgers going up against the Rangers. You got Bartolo Colon going today, and Colon's another one of these guys that people have been, you know, having a difficult time figuring out what to do with him, because, like, you know, we played him against, or played the Oakland guys against him the last time around, and he went out there and only allowed 2 earned runs in 5 innings pitched. And I think, you know, sometimes, I don't know, sometimes people start telling themselves this, like, mystical story that a guy, sure, he looks bad when he's out there, but he, like, knows how to get out. Bartolo Colon does not know how to get outs. Like, the 4.16 ERA doesn't look like the worst ERA in the entire world, and even the 4 xFIP doesn't look that bad. But the fact that he's going out there and striking out fewer than 6 guys per 9 means that people are going to make a lot of contact against him. And actually, I think the 2 home runs per 9 allowed are more in line with, or the 2 home runs per 9 are allowed, are more in line with what you can expect from him going forward. Because the big thing I want to key in on here is just the regular FIP, the fielder independent pitching, which doesn't account for a regression in home run to fly ball percentage. Now, the reason that they do this, you know, the reason most people use xFIP instead of FIP is that most pitchers tend to regress towards a pretty league average home run to fly ball percentage. And that's because most pitchers aren't allowing the kind of contact that Bartolo Colon is allowing. It's just to say, they're not just going up there and pitching actual batting practice to people. Like, he's not walking anybody either. It's 1.26 walks per 9. So basically, if you go up there, you're going to get your cuts. And this year, the BABIP is 231. Last year, it was 331. The year before that, it was 333. So I think you can count on this year being the lucky year. I think you're going to see a huge spike in Colon and the Dodgers. I mean, this is a team that's the 6th best against right-handed pitching on the course of the season. And that's actual good right-handed pitchers, too. Not some of the worst ever, like Bartolo Colon in his age 45 season. So I'm definitely going to be thinking pretty seriously about a Dodgers stack. And I'm actually encouraged that the Vegas line doesn't seem to reflect, in my opinion, how bad Colon still really is.
Yeah, you get guys at the top of that lineup too. Like Max Muncy's kind of come out of nowhere. He's got like 1,000 OPS this season. Yeah. And it doesn't look all that lucky. I mean, he's got some home run to fly ball stuff that probably is unsustainable at 28%, but he's not going to regress back to like an 800 OPS guy. He looks like, by all accounts, he's going to stick in that probably high 800s range. And then you get like Cody Bellinger kind of still coming on the cheap because his home runs just haven't completely materialized this year. He was probably running hot last year after coming up. That was likely unsustainable, but I think we're getting a deal on him. Sometimes we get a deal on the Dodgers team in general, just because they do switch their order around at times, like especially the middle of the lineup guys. Like they've shuffled Bellinger like from this 3-hole down to the 7-hole and back up and down. Kemp has been the same way. Puig, these guys, Jock Peterson, kind of sometimes is the leadoff guy, sometimes not. And that when that happens, you actually do get bigger price fluctuation. It just kind of trends everyone down a little bit because they're not getting the correct, quote unquote, correct amount of plate appearances for what they're going to get that given day. So, I'm completely with you on buying there on the Dodgers. You mentioned the Sal Romano, Ian Kennedy game. The Reds have made a change in the short term where they move Schebler up to the top of the lineup, which is a move I really like. He's still coming kind of cheap if he's just going to be their leadoff hitter against a guy like Kennedy. I always get a little worried when guys like Kennedy are out there because they do have some strikeout potential. And I just wish there was just a few more hitters on the actual Royals side of the ball. Like they are projected for around 5 runs here, implied total. And then they have guys like Alcides Escobar hitting second. So it's just one of those teams where I wish, I mean, Moustakas is obviously very good. They mostly feature right-handed bats through the lineup and they're just not a very good team, but they're also coming cheap because they're not very good. So I think that's just another great spot to be. There's just a lot of bad pitchers. Looks like the Brewers-Cubs line just came in too. One's up in around 9.5 over-under in Miller Park. That's a Chatwood versus Chase Anderson game. I mean, that almost strikes me as a little bit low. Is that another game that you think you could, or just like, is it embarrassment of riches with bats here? You can tell I'm having a little trouble focusing.
Well, it's almost like there's a lot of games that strike me as very, very similar. Like, in that 9 to 9.5 total game, kind of a pick'em. You know, the Minnesota Detroit game falls in that category as well. Even the Washington Yankees game, like that has a +9 total with the Yankees. And, you know, the Yankees have Tanner Roark, so not the worst pitcher in the world, and they're expensive in general. But like you said, on FanDuel, you can pay up for it. I think there's just a lot of pitchers that are sort of in that broad category of bad, but not the worst ever. And that's going to yield a lot of teams that just look pretty similar today. And actually, one we didn't even mention, because you know we tend even not to mention them because they're on the expensive side, is the Red Sox. Like if you can actually pay up and get some Red Sox against David Hess today, he's another guy with a sub-5 K per nine. So yeah, the list of bad pitchers is extremely long. And I just a comical stat on David Hess before we move. Left on base percentage this season, 94%. So 94% of the batters that reach base get left there, and he still has a higher than 3 ERA. So that just gives you some insight into how many batters he's allowing on base. So yeah, anyways, it's a long list. It's going to be hard to mess up the bats tonight, and maybe even hard to mess up the pitching. I think DraftKings is really going to be where your skill gets put into play, finding that pitcher 2 slot and then filling in the rest. But yeah, as long as you're on one of these games, like don't get too cute and try to target some of the actual competent pitchers, I think you're going to do fine.
Yep, I think we can get out of here with that. There are just so many choices. I think that's why you see, at least when you run early lineups, you just see a smattering of just a different guy from every team in every position, just because there's just so many choices. All right, dfsr.com/MLB will get you that free 3-day trial. So go check that out. Free for 3 days and $29.95 a month after optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Please go check out our PGA podcast coming out later today for the U.S. Open. Should give some insight into putting together lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings if you want to sweat out one of the golf majors. Buddy, back again tomorrow talking some more baseball.
Peace.